mentions of the celebration of Yom HaTzmaut. There's many different dimensions of being a Jew. And I want to talk about one that is something that I've received from my Rebbeim, that I've received from Shiurim in Divrei Torah, that I've received over the years of my own development. That means a lot to me personally. And hopefully I could successfully share that with you.
Is this Shahakal?
Yeah. That is Shahakal, yeah. So I want to begin by learning. It's always good to start from second parsha. I hope this is a little bit of an esoteric. This is a little bit of an esoteric Torah, but hopefully if we can just take an akuda from it or a main idea, we can put some things into context. This is a Torah from, we have a double parsha this week. This is a Torah from the beginning of the second parsha of this week, from parsha Mitzorah, from the beautiful sefer Noam Elimelech. Who started the Noam Elimelech? From the Rebbe of Melech. Rebbe of Melech. Anybody heard of Noam Elimelech? Rebbe Elimelech from the Jets. He was one of the third generation of Gedolei Hasidus, the Tzaddikim of Hasidus. He was the grand student of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov founded Hasidus, and his major student was the Maggid of Mizrich. And he had five major students. One of them was Rav Noam Elimelech, of Lezhensk, one of the very, very, very special Jew, really responsible in a large way for the explosion of the Hasidic world in Poland and Galicia. If anybody ever has the opportunity to go to Europe, go to Poland, to go to the kever of Noam Elimelech is incredibly inspirational. Baruch Hashem, I was able to be there, and the Torah of Noam Elimelech is also very special. And this is a Torah that he has in the beginning of Parshat Torah. He says like this. Try to follow along. It's a little bit esoteric. If you miss it, I'll try to crunch the point. And he says like this. Zos tia Torah samitzorah. This is the beginning of the second parsha. This is the Torah of the Mitzorah. Oh man, I could. So many tangents that we could get to, but we'll lose the focus and we'll stay focused. Says the Noam Elimelech, Zos tei Torah samitzorah. He says an esoteric Torah. This is Hasidus. Sometimes Hasidic Torah. Who's learned a little Hasidus? Maybe learned a little Hasidus. So sometimes Torah of Hasidus is always coming from mysticism. Is always coming from Kabbalah. Is always coming from that deeper part. What we call maybe Sod. What we call the deeper mystical dimension of Torah. And sometimes the way a Hasidic Torah will be developed is based on some types of correlations and cross references that are somewhat obscure, difficult to really make sense of unless you really understand Chazal, really understand Tanakh, really understand Zohar.
What do you mean by that?
Let's see what he says right here. He says like this: Nira Lomar, the Hashchina Nikreis Zos. The Shechina Nikreis Zos. So the pasuk says, Zos tia Torah samitzorah. This is the Torah of the Mitzorah. In a simple meaning, this is the teaching, this is the guidance of how the Mitzorah becomes Tahor from being a Mitzorah. But he quotes, he's going to develop this idea that really there is a reference, there's a deeper understanding, what's called Sod, or what's called Remez. We know there's four levels of Torah. Pardes, Pshat, Drash, Remez, Sod, right? The symbol meaning, the Remez, which may be Drash, which is Drashos, which is the way Chazal Darshan Psukim, both in Halacha and Agada, revealing deeper messages. Then there's Remez. Remez is like Gematria or word configurations, and how that reveals different things about the Torah. Then there's Sod. Sod is the Kabbalistic and mystical understandings of Torah, which refer to the revelation of God Himself within the Torah, which is obviously, well, that's what Kabbalah is. Kabbalah is revealing, right? We're coming up on Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer celebrates Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is the author of the Zohar, and the Zohar, the Jewish Kabbalistic mystical tradition, is the Torah. There is actually a lot of nigla. There's a lot of revealed meaning. There's a lot of pshat and drash in what's called midrashim, more revealed, more understandable types of teaching to the common man in the Zohar, but the Zohar is mainly marked, noted by its mystical nature, its sod, meaning the deeper inferences and correlations that it brings out, referring to the world of God, the world of the esoteric, the mystical reality.
Rabbi
so
Miller,
in Chassidus, yeah.
What happened with Kabbalistic words and stuff between the Zohar and the Arizal?
I don't know. I mean, talk about it for a while. Meaning, I could give you a great Hebrew essay on the topic. It's what became called Kabbalah. Kabbalah literally means a tradition which is passed down in a more private and a more tsanua and a more hidden type of sense. There were mekubalim between, meaning the Torah of Kabbalah was alive and well in a much smaller extent than it became in the days of the Arizal, and then later in the days of the Lagon, the days of the Baal Shem Tov, and the Maharal, the Ramchal. The Torah of Kabbalah, the mystical tradition, was alive and well, but it was very hidden, and it was passed down teacher to student in much smaller confines. The Ramban, who was an early Rishon, was a big Mekubal. Many Rishonim were big Mekubalim. So it was there, it was alive and well. There's not so much written in the mystical tradition, a good 1,000 years. But it was there, it was alive and well. No problem. And then what was so chash about that Arizal was that he kind of brought the Torah of Kabbalah down to a level which became much more tangible, much more connectable, much more digestible. Still way up there.
Was that controversial?
Was that controversial? To a certain degree. To a certain degree. To a certain degree. Small degree. That Arizal was accepted by Klal Yisrael. Also, the Arizal himself also kept things very, very tsenua. Kept things very, very humble and hidden. Didn't really... he taught one student. We learned about these things when we went to Tzfat a little bit. He taught Reb Chaim Vital. I mean, he had his chabura, but in terms of the writings, things were kept kind of on the DL, and then they came out. Actually, maybe we'll touch more when I develop the idea that I want to develop if we get there. What that Arizal began or kind of the revolution that he brought about during his time, I think continues to develop with Nidon Lagon, who was a massive Mekubal and wrote tremendously in Kabbalah, as well as the Baal Shem Tov, called the Or Shivas Yimei Breishis, the light of the 7 days of creation, who took the Kabbalistic tradition from the Arizal and exploded it into what we know as Chassidus, and taught his students, and Chassidus is totally predicated and built upon the Kabbalistic tradition and bringing it down to the masses in a way that had never been done before in Jewish history, and maybe the idea that we'll develop also connects that revolution even in more recent history.
Sorry.
Let's learn. Yeah.
Just want to know what your definition of Chassidus is.
Not the Mesillas Yesharim's definition of Chassidus, even though that's a very important definition of Chassidus. I refer to the Baal Shem Tov's revolution and his revelation, and his students and all of their Torah, their teachings, and their traditions, their way of life, their philosophy. That's what I.
What revelation?
T- how to put the Baal Shem Tov's revelation in one sentence. The intimate,
full hard.
The intimate and real present connection and love that every Jew can feel with God, who has all of those same things times infinite for every single Jew, the joy and the passion that comes as a result of feeling that infinite, intimate love that God has for every Jew, the inspiration and chizuk that one gets from feeling that love, the brotherhood with all of Klal Yisrael that one gets from recognizing that love is a reality that Hashem has for every Jew, the passion, the energy, the joy that happens as a result of feeling that love that God has intimately for every single Jew. In a nutshell.
That all ties down to his bodhis.
His bodhis is an opportunity that one, that's a very, very valuable thing, that is a very, very old tradition, going all the way back to the Nevi'im, but that famously became much more famous in the days of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, or in the teachings of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, utilizing his bodhis as an opportunity to feel and actualize one's connection with God in a very, very personal, very real, very raw way. His bodhis is a great tool to tap into that love.
I'd also add on, if you don't mind me adding, it's great if I can see this, that also they put a huge emphasis on, or at least the original chassids, like the Baal Shem Tov or Inachman, that like those guys, the Magid, they put a huge emphasis on davening and like connecting to Hashem when you're davening, and like they had like long davenings to connect, like to really, really get immersed and connect with Hashem, as well as song. Song was a really big thing that Hasidus added, like a lot more song.
Singing, you say?
Yeah, like singing and davening.
Karlach.
I think
before Karlach,
I know, but like
Karlach
thing
also. He was a student of the Hasidic tradition in a big way.
Right.
That yes, absolutely. Absolutely fantastic. Tefillah is just Tefillah is one of the most important ways of manifesting the close love that one has with Hashem, and feeling the love that Hashem has for us, and obviously Nigunim as well, the passion and the energy, the intimacy that one can feel with Hashem as a result of Nigun, absolutely became a very, very important dimension of Hasidus. Anyway, getting back to this Torah from the Noam Elimelech. So it says, the Noam Elimelech, Zos, Torah Sametzora, Nira Lidashchina Nikrei Zos. So he says that there is an association that we can make. There's an association that can be made from the word Zos. Zos, I don't want to get into it, but based on Joshua's Chazal, Zos could be a reference to the Shechina. Who knows what the Shechina is?
Hashem's glory.
Not Hashem's cloud.
Divine presence. Yeah.
Hashem's bread. Hashem's presence that rests in this world, right? Excellent, right? Shechina milashon lishkon, to dwell in this world. So Zos, based on Chazal, based on Kabbalah, can be a reference to the Shechina. Okay, so if that's so, says the Noam Melech, and this is very, very typical for Hasidic Torah, we can reread a pasuk, again, veering from its simple meaning, but we can reread it with revealing to us something deeper. Again, veering from its simple meaning, legamrei, completely, but showing us that it can have this correlation, that it can have this meaning on a deeper level. So he says like this, V'yadua de mitzora hu motzira. We know that a mitzora is called a mitzora because he was motzira, right? A person gets tzaras for... Trick question?
Lashonara.
Right, it's a trick question. Lashonara is actually only 1/7 of the answer. The Gemara in Erechin gives 7 reasons why one would get tzaras, but it's the most famous one, absolutely. That, and motzira, and also it's also comes out of the word itself, mitzora, motzi ra, he gave off evil, meaning he spoke badly. That a metzora gets tzaras because he was motzi ra. That negayim by lashon hara, because the negayim, these skin afflictions that we're learning about in Tezri Metzora, they come from lashon hara. Diamar akasu. This is a very, very important principle. The pasuk tells us. When a person does tshuva and is metakin and refines his ways, v'yifol al yedei tshuva so v'soraso tikun hashchina nikrei zos. Says the Noam Elimelech, and based on what we said, based on the answer to Yehuda's question, maybe it'll make a little more sense. When a person does tshuva, when a person is refining, when a person is rectifying their themselves as a result due to sins, due to transgressions, misbehaviors, veering off, the tshuva process is not only about personal rectification, but the tshuva process what also has a massive effect, so to speak, on the Shechina, on God's presence in this world. The yifal al yedei tshuva, so that when a person does tshuva and Talmud Torah and sanctifies himself and betters himself and grows, he not only is doing something self-centered in a good way, but he's also doing something that has an effect on God's presence in this world.
Is it saying the same thing like in the Derech Hashem Lashon, where like revealing Hashem versus hiding Hashem?
Yeah, good. You're right. Along those similar lines, right? V'zeu zos tia Torah samitzora, says the Noam Elimelech. Let's read this pasuk from in this deeper way. That zos is a reference to God, the Shechina, God's presence in this world. Tia Torah samitzora perish she Torah samitzora, that the Torah of the mitzora, this process, this guidance, that the Torah is coming to teach the mitzora, this person who's coming to rectify, coming to do tshuva, coming to cleanse himself. It should be done with the consciousness. It should be done in the context of zos. That he's not only doing it for himself, but he's doing it for God. As maybe what Yisrael was hinting to, when we do Torah and mitzvos, so there is a famous Chazal, and the Rambam brings this down, Rashi brings it down in Chumash, and it's very true that Torah and mitzvos, for a large part, are about us. To rectify and to refine ourselves, to make ourselves as great as we possibly can, because Hashem loves us and He wants us to be as great as we possibly can, and He gave us Torah and mitzvahs, He gave us tshuva, He gave us the entire Tariq mitzvahs, He gave us all of Shulchan Aruch as a way for us to actualize and better ourselves as much as we possibly can. But that's A, it's only half the picture, and B, it's a little bit of a selfish and an egotistical understanding of what Torah is. And this is one thing that Chassidus and Kabbalah reveals to us. There's another dimension of Torah. There's another dimension of Avodas Hashem. That's not about me, but it's about God. It's about God. What I mean, it's about God. God created this world. Oh, I meant to put a medrash on this story sheet, I forgot to. God created this world, and in the very beginning of Torah, what does it say? It says, Kol Hashem Mishalich Bagan. God's voice was walking in the Garden of Eden. And Chazal and the Medrash say, it's Medrash and Shir say, that when Adam HaRishon sinned, you know, it was the biggest catastrophe of the result of Adam HaRishon's sin. Not that we were sentenced with death or hard work, or women were sentenced with pain and child labor, or the snake has to eat dirt for the rest of its existence. Right? These are punishments for man, and they're not good. But you know what was the biggest calamity, the result of the fate of Adam HaRishon? God's presence was removed from this world. Why is that such a calamity? Because, I don't mean to answer this question so bluntly, but why did God create this world? So that His presence could be in this world. So that His presence could be in this lowest possible world. The Lashon of the Medrash, Nis'ava HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoslo Dir B'Tachtonim. God wanted, the Baal Tanya in Lubavitch, it's one of their fundamental pillars of the philosophy of the Baal Tanya, but it's a Medrash of Chazal, it's a fundamental Jewish principle as well, that what? God created this world so that His Shechina could rest down here. And what happened when Adam sinned? He literally kicked God out of the world. And the Medrash continues, and said, then came the chait of Cain and Hevel, and then came the chait of the door of Noach, and the chait of the door of Flugga, the door of Mabul, and seven different sins, right? And there's also Lemech in there. Seven different sins that happened in the beginning, the first 2,000 years of history. Mankind successfully, literally, this is not my words, this is the words of Chazal. I'm sorry that I did bring the message. What do? We literally kicked God out of the world. In fact, it says even, we kicked God up seven heavens out of this world. Until who came along?
Avram
Avinu, exactly. What was so profound about Avram Avinu? What was so chosen? What was so special about Avram Avinu? You know what he did? He started to reintroduce mankind, reintroduce the world to God. He reversed the trajectory of the divine presence. Up till his time, the divine presence was getting further and further and further away from this world. In the days of Avram Avinu, he said, hold on, what's going on over here? There's a creator, there's a master, there's a father in heaven, a loving, benevolent, caring, all-powerful God in heaven. And we've forgotten him, we've abandoned him, we've betrayed him, we've left him. And he started to reintroduce mankind to God, not only as this concept, but as the God who wanted his presence to dwell down in this world. And the Medrash continues and says that Avram started this unbelievable revolution of reintroducing God to the world. Yitzchak took it a step further. Yaakov took it a step further. I believe the Medrash says Yehuda took it a step further, if I remember correctly. Or maybe it's Levi. Whoever it is. And then it ends with Moshe at Har Sinai successfully, once again, bringing God all the way back down to this world. It's an unbelievable Medrash to really understand.
And then it's passed on.
Everything. He gave us the Torah. And the Torah became the tool. The Torah became the object. The Torah became the blueprint for us to be able to continue this mission, which is really the purpose of creation. Bringing God into this world. And what does that mean? That means when I engage in Talmud Torah, when I put on tefillin, when I eat kosher, when I speak nicely, when I do a chesed, when I do a mitzvah, when I live in the land of Israel, when I keep Shabbos, when I have a moment of closeness with God, whatever it is, that is I fulfilled my obligation, but I fulfilled the purpose of creation, of bringing God into this world.
I don't really understand that purpose.
Good question. Great question. Yeah. Great question.
But then
great question. That's in a certain sense. That's what all of. I'm going to say something blunt. That's way beyond me. That's what all of Kabbalah is about, and that's what all of Jewish philosophy is about. Namely, understanding why God would have wanted to do that.
Right.
Meaning, wasn't he happy in his infinite reality? Why did he need this finite reality? Why did he have this desire to create this finite reality that his presence could rest in? It seems Derech Hashem is about this idea. The entire Torah is about this idea. All of Halacha is about this idea. Hopefully we'll understand it by 120. But Kabbalah really gets into... But Kabbalah really gets into opening it up in a mystical way, because it's about God. It's talking about God. It's talking about God. Yes?
You're saying that...
I didn't say anything yet.
up until when Moshe, right? At that Moshe, that's when Hashem's presence came back, right? So to speak.
Right, that's Har-Sinai, the revelation. Right? So Har-Sinai's
revelation. What about before then? You said there's no meaning, like no purpose before then?
No, not no purpose. There's always a purpose. The question is Shekhinah, divine presence.
There's no Shekhinah before then, without Ramesh.
There's always levels, intensity.
Like just like he went up seven, maybe he came back.
Yeah. Hold on to your question. If we get through any of this, I think the question will be addressed. Says Noam Elimelech, this Yisod. What's the Yisod? The Yisod is Zos Tiatoras HaMetzora. That the Metzora is not only focused on his own personal, and I'm going to use this word in a way, selfish rectification, and not selfish in a bad way, selfish in a good way, but it's also about God. That his progress, his purpose, is about God. It's for the sake of bringing God back into this world. And that's how he darshens, that's how he explains the pasuk. Zos tia toras ha-metzora. Zos tia toras ha-metzora. Okay, then he goes on and Then he goes on and elaborates on following Pesukim, but I don't want to get stuck in the Omer Melech. I mean, I would love to get stuck in the Omer Melech. It's a great place to get stuck, but I do want to try to develop an idea coming from there. So that's an idea connected to this week's parasha, that what the Metzora's development, the Metzora's rectification, is not only about his own personal growth, which it is largely about. I'll just give you a Mayer Makom. Check out the first two Pesukim of Parshas Metzora. There's a beautiful, it's a chiddush that I want, that I had at my nephew's Shalom Zachar. My nephew actually just had his 11th birthday, I think. So it's Shalom Zachar, 11 years ago, Parshas Metzora. I said an idea about I think it's five different names that this person called the Metzora is given in the beginning of Parshas Metzora. That's your homework over Shabbos. Tell me on Sunday, what are the five different names that this one person is given in the beginning of Parshas Metzora? Anyway, so what's that? What do I want to talk about? I want to talk about God. I want to talk about God, and I want to talk about this idea of living our life with a recognition and a realization that God's revelation, God's presence in this world is at different levels of intensity, let's say, at different times in history, and also that we as individuals, and also we as Klal Yisrael, are directly related to that level of intensity that God's presence in this world is felt and is revealed. One of the very, very strong ways that this principle expresses itself is with the relationship between God and the land of Israel. And I want to show you some psukim, I want to show you some prophecies. I want to show you some prophecies which reveal this principle. But before that, I want to tell you a story that's on the bottom of this sheet, the second to last thing. I'll tell it to you outside. And it's because of this story that I named the title of these Divrei Torah, L'Hashem HaYeshua. We know the phrase L'Hashem HaYeshua. When do we say that every single week? We say it a bunch of times. But what time do we say it? Beautiful. What's the pasuk? Hashem Yeshua Al-Amcha B'Yuchatecha Selah. Good. L'Hashem Yeshua Al-Amcha B'Yuchatecha Selah. Right? To God is the... What does it mean? L'Hashem Yeshua, to God is the salvation. For His nation, B'Yuchatecha is your blessing. Selah is forever. The simple meaning of that pasuk is... What does it mean that for God... that L'Hashem HaYeshua, it means that the salvation that we experience came from God. That's a simple thing that it's referring to, and that's one of the things that we're davening for in Havdalah, when we invoke that pasuk. Havdalah is a big time of davening for Yeshua, that it should be a good week, and all the things that we're davening for when Shabbos ends, about the week ahead, and that's why we invoke that pasuk. But I want to take a little bit of detour.
Davening on Shabbos?
What?
You said in davening on Shabbos?
At Havdalah. The pasuk is in Havdalah at the end of Shabbos. But I want to take a little detour to a day in Hasidic history called Yud Tes Kislev. Who shared Yud Tes Kislev?
Is it the Baal Tan?
That's right. Yud Tes Kislev, the 19th of Kislev, this is going back to the 1700s, when the first Rebbe of Chabad, the Alter Rebbe, also a student, he was a colleague of the Noam Elimelech, and a student of the Magen Mizrich, the Balatanya, the Rav, the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he was a student of the Balatanya. He was a student of the Magen Mizrich, a student of Baal Shem Tov, and he has what's called his Yom HaGeula, his day where he celebrated his personal redemption. What's the story? The story is, to make a long story short, he was put in prison by the Russians in St. Petersburg in this very intense, high security prison. And I'm not sure if it was in Gulag, it was in St. Petersburg. The Gulags were more like...
They put political prisoners in the side.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so he understood on a deep mystical way that the real reason, on a deeper level, why he was put in prison was because he was teaching Chassidus and Kabbalah. He was revealing a lot of the secrets of the Torah based on the tradition of his teacher, the Magen Mezrich, and his teacher, the Baal Shem Tov. And he was revealing the secrets of the Torah, he was revealing Chassidus, and he understood that he was put in prison as a revelation of a kind of heavenly trial, heavenly court case that was going on regarding his activities and really the Hasidic movement in general. That's how he understood. He ended up being in prison for 51 days, and he came out of prison. It was around Simchas Torah he went in. He came out of prison on, he was freed on Yuntes Kislev, the 19th of Kislev, and he understood that, just like he understood the being in prison as a heavenly court case trial against what he was doing. When he got out and freed from prison, he understood that as what? Basically, in heaven, they had decreed
it was okay for
him. It was okay, and it was proper what he was doing, right? And in Chabad, in Lubavitch, and other communities as well, they celebrate this day in a very, very intense way with Fabrengen, Hisvadus, excitement, joy, celebration, learning, davening, singing, brotherhood, camaraderie, very deep, and Kabbalahs, they take upon themselves to learn the Tanya, to learn Gemara. It's called in Rosh Hashanah L'Chassidus. And it's a very, very big celebration, a very, very big joy in the Hasidic world, and especially in the world of Chabad Lubavitch. One of the students in the next generation of the Baal HaTanya, when he was celebrating Yitzhak Kislev the following year, he said like this. He was at a Fabrengen. If it was a Fabrengen, is a Yisvadas, a gathering, a gathering, celebrating this very, very special day.
Where did that concept come from?
Human nature, as well as Torah, as well as Halacha, meaning celebrating. There's something natural to celebrate.
Right.
Hasidic celebration and emotional and intensity and eating and drinking and even a little bit b'chaim, getting drunk. There's tons of chazals and psukim about the power and the value of utilizing food and drink to celebrate and to intensify and to feel things in a deep way and to connect with people and connect with emotions, connect with spirituality. So that's one of the innovations of Chassidus, the Baal Shem Tov, and some of his students, not all but some, was that this idea of a tish, this idea of a fabregan, a isvadas, a gathering with emotion and spirituality, and in Chabad it became also a very, very central part of their practice, their spirituality. And in many Hasidic communities, you have the tish, you have the hizbah, whatever it is. There's a lot. It's a great topic, a lot to say on it, but that's a short answer. So one year at one of these Fabrengen celebrating Yitzhak Kislev, so one of the Alter Rebbe's students named Reisel Hummel, so he was sitting and he said like this. I'll read to you. It's down here. He said like this. He said, "Madua hitasafnu lo amarnu hayom tachnun va'ata yinenu shotim mashke. Why are we all together? We didn't say tachnun today, and we're all drinking. We're saying l'chaim. We're drinking a little l'chaim. Hatshuva hi.
What does tachnun have to do with it?
Not saying tachnun is something that's done on a yantir for a special on a special day. Right?
So it's not a reason to celebrate.
What? No, it's the other way around. The fact that you don't say tachnun indicates that there is a reason to celebrate.
So then it's fine that they're didn't he say why are we celebrating?
Yes.
Oh, it,
and one of the expressions of this day being a day of celebration is that we didn't say tachnun.
Oh, okay.
Why? So he says, Hachuva hi, the answer is Hayom HaRebi Yatsa Mehatayna Savit HaMuatsa HaChashayit HaMivtzar Boya Asura Admar Zakin. Right? Today the Alter Rebbe got out of prison. Avor mi eifo asimcha. But who is the celebration for? He said, "Avor HaRebi is the celebration for the Rebbe." So he says something profound. Avor HaRebi Hashut B'Tayna Savit O Alamita B'Beito Hen Osu Davar. The Alter Rebbe was somebody with such profound level of spirituality, such profound level of closeness to God. His physical reality didn't really matter. He could be in prison and he could feel this closeness to Hashem. That didn't stare him, didn't bother him. He could be in bed in his house. He could be in shul. He is in a constant state of closeness with Hashem. That's the way of tzaddikim. So if it's not really such a big deal for him, so who are we celebrating for? And Rav Isaac Luhamov said, Elamai, L'Hashem HaYeshua. Today we celebrate the salvation of God. Hainu Shahayeshua Haitel L'Hakadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol. Today we're celebrating God's salvation. Now, my friends, if you understand what I just said, you may want to start throwing stuff at me, because it sounds a little bit heretical and a little bit theologically challenging, suspicious to say the least. Lule Yitzia Me'amaser Lohin Yodim Sheyesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olam. But he said, had the Alter Rebbe not come out of prison, and had his teachings and Hasidus, again, this is coming from the Chabad Hasidic world and their own value of their leaders, but they really believe it, and their Torah is profound and very special, and they live and die by it. But he said, had the Alter Rebbe not come out of prison, we wouldn't have known that there's a God in this world. Say Eifo Ata Rabbona Shalolam Berikud. So let's go in God's name and dance. What does he mean by this? What does he mean by this? So as we began to say, what he means is, and I will make it a little easier to understand this. On a historical level, kind of like what David was saying, or like Yehuda was saying, from what he asked about Hasidus, when Baal Shem Tov began, there was a level. And from what Brandon asked before, there was a level of distance that the Jewish people felt from God. A lack of intimacy, a lack of closeness, a lack of close relationship, a lack of understanding, and a lack of constant consciousness living with God. There was great Torah learning. There was devout devotion to the Jewish people, Jewish tradition, Jewish customs, halacha. What Baal Shem Tov brought down was a renewal of the intimate, living, passionately close with God on a daily basis. Feeling that. Like David said in Tefillah and in Nigun, in his Bodidus. And the truth of the matter is, and this is indisputable, if a person looks at different waves, different time periods of Jewish history, so there are times when it's clear that our closeness with God and our present consciousness and intimacy with God, both as individuals and as a people, sometimes is much, much stronger, sometimes is much, much weaker. If you open up this book, strongly recommend it, it's a great book, the Jewish Bible. You open up this book, you read the book of Kings, Kings 1 and Kings 2. And you also read the book of Samuel 1 and 2, and the book of Judges, just one of those. And the book of Joshua, one of those. What you'll see is waves of moments of tremendous closeness to God, national on a national level I'm talking about, and times of tremendous rebellion, idolatry. What's idolatry? How did God himself express what idolatry was? Idolatry is literally having an affair with another woman. On a relationship with God level, right? Like right in front of him too, because he's always there, right? Like God's right here, and you're cheating on him with another God, but he's in the room. Like, Rahman al-Utslan. That's what idolatry was, and it was rampant throughout Tanakh, throughout Yoshua, Shoftim, Malachim, Shmuel, Malachim.
Didn't they once worship like a...
They worshipped all kinds of stuff. You name it, they worshipped it.
It was like a whole
trees and pigs and Baal and statues. They cheated on God. And what happens as a natural result? God distances himself. His presence, his divine presence, moves back to the extent that culminated with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is the place where God said, V'shachanti v'socham, I'm going to dwell there. But you cheat on God so much, at a certain point he says, I'm sorry, I can handle so much, but it gets to a certain point, right? Right? That's what the Gemara in Yoma says. One of the reasons why the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Idolatry, right? Avodah Zarah? No, that's second Beis HaMikdash. Avodah Zarah, Shfichas Damim, murder, and what? Gil Arayos, and sexual promiscuity, right? Sexual sin, right? Adultery. Which is not Stam, because that's part of the mentality. It goes together with the Avodah Zarah, they're very, very similar. And Shechazdam and murder also, the most valuable thing in God's world is
life.
Human life, exactly. Not life, human life. Right. All life is very valuable. The most valuable thing is human life. When a person doesn't take that, doesn't value what God values, so that's another way of betraying him. It's another way of cheating on him, so to speak. So those big three, God said, that's it, I'm out of here. Right? Baruch Hashem, he let us come back in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash. We rebuilt. It wasn't as good, but it was very special. There was no prophecy. There was there was a level of intimacy that was seriously, seriously missing in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash. But unfortunately, that also didn't last long, and we lost second Beis HaMikdash because of Sinas Chinam. And why is that so bad? Because what's the most valid? What? That's right, exactly right. Because God is our parent. Senseless hatred between Jew and his fellow Jew. Because God is our parent, and the most valuable thing to a parent is the way the one sibling interacts with other siblings. When he sees this incredible dysfunction and incredible senseless hatred between the siblings, he says, "I am out of here. You guys better figure this thing out." And we're still working on that for 2,000 years.
Mm.
One second. Let's just. Baruch Hashem, there's been some fantastic things that have happened over the 2,000 years. We had the Tanayim that we met when we were up in Tzfas, right? Culminating with the writing of the Mishnah of Yudah Nasi, and then the Amoraim, the explosion of Torah and Babel, Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, and then the Jewish people spreading out to all four corners of the world, right? Starting in North Africa, Babylonia, going up into Europe, Spain, Poland, Germany, right? And then the Rishonim, tremendous explosion of Torah in the days of the Rishonim, the Golden Age of Spain. I'm sure you've heard about the Rabbi Levi and the Rambam and all of the great Gedolim from Spain and the Bar Benel. Everything was going on in Spain. It was an unbelievable time. And then there's the expulsion from Spain, Inquisition, Lemaisa in Jewish history. Yeah, it's a good story. It's a chashuv story, very chashuv story. But it's all been A, outside of the land of Israel, B, without a Beis HaMikdash, and from this perspective of our role and our what's expected of us, the expectation of us to be the ones, to be the conduit and be the ones to bring God into this world, we've been trying and the explosion of Torah, the explosion of Jewish values over the world, the resilience of the Jewish people to be able to continue to last in this dark exile, right? Everybody, I assume, heard the incredible class, Seven Wonders of Jewish History, right? All the miracles of the continuation of the Jewish people, and not only just continuing, but thriving in our values, thriving in Torah, thriving in Jewish communities, rising in all four corners of the world, unbelievably, and Jewish brotherhood, even though we're separated all over the four corners of the world. But what about this mission? What about this mission? What about this focus that it's our duty and it's part of our makeup to give God a salvation, so to speak? To bring God in a very, very intense, I don't want to say tangible, but a very, very intense presence into this world. So one of the great, in my opinion, one of the great revolutions, one of the great developments in Jewish history of bringing God into the world, certainly bringing God into the Jewish world in a very, very intense way, is from the Baal Shem Tov, the Baal Tanya, and Hasidus in general, which is really bringing God not only Torah as an academic or intellectual pursuit, but God as someone that we can have a personal, emotional, intimate relationship with. That's La Hashem HaYeshua. That's what Rabbi Zalhamler was saying. Had the Alter Rebbe not got out and taught us his Torah and revealed to us this tradition, we would have lived in a reality that God would be imprisoned, so to speak. Why? Based on that medrash, the way that medrash from Shir Shirim that I mentioned to you earlier formulates God's presence and becoming distance. So based on that formulation, without the Baal Tanya, without Chassidus, God is like stuck up there. But part of what we are striving for is to what? Bring God down here. And that's a big, big, big thing in the world of Chassidus and the world of Chabad. And I want to take that principle. I'll take your question, even though I want to try to just get to the last point before. I also wanted to sing a little bit. This is like singing. Is there a way to turn on the air conditioner? Or,
it doesn't work.
Okay, I'll have to work on it. You have a question, or can, we'll get back to it. Fine, we'll get back to it. When you remember, we'll get back to it. I want to take this principle, and I want to bring it over, and this is not my own thought, but some of the ways to develop this thought, I want to bring it over to Zionism. I want to bring it over to the modern state of Israel, or the return of the Jewish people to our native ancestral homeland.
Well, which one? Because aren't those the modern state in Israel and Jews are turning different?
Great question. I'm happy to talk about it. I think they're fundamentally bound. Happy to come back to it.
Okay.
So this is a song I wanted to teach you. Is Mishra really going to start at 10:45, or we could maybe go a little bit long? I want to teach you one song, because this song is. This is a song that on the second page. It's a Nevuah in Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu chapter 52, Nun Beis, Pasuk Chet. And the song goes like this: Kol Tzofayich Nasu Kol Yachdav Iraneinu. Kol Tzofayich Nasu Kol Yachdav Iraneinu. What does it mean? The voice of Tzofayich. The voice of what's it? Tzofet. What's it, Sofeh? Who says, anybody say Yigdal ever? Yigdal? Anybody, you say Yigdal when you're young for a reference in the show, say Yigdal?
Yeah.
Right, Sofeh, what's Sofeh, Mabit Sofeh? Sofeh is a prophet, Sofeh is a vision, right? So, Kol Sofeh, the voice of your prophet, the voice of your visionaries. Right? This is a prophecy that's coming from the Nevi'im. Kol Sofeh, so the voice of your prophets, Sofeh means your prophets. Nasu Kol, they have raised up their voice. Yachdav Yiranenu. Together, Yiranenu, we will sing. We will celebrate. Yiranen is a lashon of rina, is a lashon of a celebratory type of song. Kol tzofayich nasu kol yachdav Yiranenu. Kol tzofayich nasu kol yachdav Yiranenu. Ay ki ayin, ki ayin be'ayin yiru. Beshuv Hashem, Beshuv Hashem Tzion, Ki Ayin Ve'Ayin Yiru. Beshuv Hashem, Beshuv Hashem Tzion. What are the prophets? What are they singing about? What are they raising their voices in song about? You know what they're raising their voices about? It Ki Ayin Ve'Ayin Yiru. For we will see with our naked eye, ba'ayin ba'ayin, a double lashon, ki ayin ba'ayin, with our eyes, you know what we're going to see? Beshuv Hashem Tzion.
Returning
of Hashem. The return of God to Zion. There's many things that are celebrated in Yom HaTzmaut. Celebrated in the context of what's called religious Zionism. Celebrated with the focus of this day, the 5th of Iyar, but really celebrating an entire historical process. There's the salvation of the Jewish people from 2,000 years of murderous exile, culminating with 4 years of a Holocaust, where 6 million Jews died. Literally a few minutes after that, you have the founding of modern state of Israel. There's the Kibbutz Galios, the ingathering of the exiles, which is something that was prophesied for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in the days of the Nevi'im. All of the Nevi'im prophesied about the ingathering of the exiles, that the Jewish people will be scattered, even Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Jewish people are going to be scattered in Chumash, and all of the Nevi'im prophesied about the Jews are going to be scattered all over the world. And then miraculously, mamish miraculously, on any historical, sociological level, the ingathering of the exiles of the Jewish people, and this is one of the premises of that class, the Seven Wonders of Jewish History, the ingathering of the exiles, is the most mind-boggling historic. Think about it a little bit. Compare and contrast to all the empires of the world. The fact that the Jewish people returned to our ancestral homeland from the four corners of the world, from China, from Russia, from South Africa, South America, North America, Europe, Poland, Scandinavia, Norway, Sweden, The fact that the Jewish people come back to our ancestral homeland after 2,000 years on a historical level is a mind-boggling miracle for anybody who's ever thought about it. Mind-boggling. That's the reason they start to celebrate. Another reason is the unbelievable... I listened just this year from a Rebbe of mine about this Nakuda, the unbelievable Jewish explosion that's happened in the land of Israel as a result of having a modern state of Israel, the explosion of yeshivas, the explosion of Torah, the explosion of chesed, the explosion of the Jewish contribution to mankind in terms of tikkun olam, in terms of startups and science and medicine, what the Jewish people have done. That's one of our jobs in this world, to be the ones to give the world these unbelievable things that we've done. There's so much to celebrate. And a dimension of the celebration, a massive dimension of the celebration, and from a Jewish philosophy dimension of the celebration, the prophets prophesize. By the way, this long nevuah that I gave you from Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Aleph, you'll know some of the psukim in there. That was the prophets prophesizing about the Jewish people being ingathering the exiles, about the restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land, of Jewish brotherhood, Jewish agriculture in the land, which is a massive Indian, right? Anybody here was with us at the Mitzvah Tullius Baritz place on Tuesday?
Yeah.
Right? So Mitzvah Tullius Baritz make up one sixth of Torah Shebaal Peh, right? All of the, right? We didn't have all of that for 2,000 years, right? Coming and talks about that, planting vineyards and wine and the olive oil and the orchards. It talks about the salvation of the Jewish people for us. So that's a massive theme when the prophets prophesize about what Geula looks like. But there's another theme. Well, there's many other themes, but there's another theme that's not about the Jewish people, that's not about salvation, it's not about overcoming our enemies, it's not about staying alive, it's not about kibbutz galios. It's about what? It's about God. It's about God. A little context. I gave you this Gemara in Maseches Chagiga that's on the bottom. That's a Gemara in Maseches Chagiga. Oh, you learned it? You learned it? About Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya and his machlokas in pantomime with the Caesars, with the guy representing the Caesar. Yeah? They have this, remember? Daf Hey?
The refresher.
Right? So, says the Gemara. What?
Which parak?
The first parak, Daf Hey Amabiz. Says the Gemara. Let's go to the top. Just go to the top of the second page. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya had a kai kesar afilehu mina amad adrinu mari. Right, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya went to have this debate. It was a debate in pantomime. Right, they couldn't speak. They just debated with hand gestures. Yeah,
vaguely remember.
So what happened? Afilehu mina. So the min, the heretic who was debating against Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. By the way,
yes.
So what did he do? He acted out an amad adrinu mari laape. He acted out a nation that turned its back on its master. Right, that's what the Jewish people did. We turned them back on God. Dajun Amari Lape Mine. Achve Le Yadu Netuyalin. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. So the heretic went like this. That was his way of showing what the side of his philosophical religious approach. What was he trying to show?
Yeah, we're not really
back on God. So how's God?
Good. He was trying to show, and this is a very important basic Christian principle, and we'll come back to this in a second. That what the Jewish people were the chosen people. The Jewish people were God's people, but that ended. That ended. Rabbi Moshe, keep this in mind. We're going to talk. This is so chesh. That ended. How did that end? God destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, sent the Jewish people to exile, and that ended. What did Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya do? Ach vele yado netuya aleinu. He put like this. He put his arm out. So what happened? Amar le Kesar le Yeshua. So the Kesar turned to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Okay, debate's over. And it was all without words, right? He went like this. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya went like this. That was the whole debate.
To the guy who walked away?
Yeah.
Okay.
Meaning he's representing the Jews. Right. He's representing the heretics. He's representing the whatever they are, the Romans, right? So the Caesar... Caesar, the most powerful person in Rome. This debate is happening in Rome in front of the Caesar. The Caesar says, Mr. Rabbi Shua ben Hananya, one of the great Tanayim. By the way, his stories in Chazal are much unbelievable, very, very special. So he says, Mr. Rabbi Shua ben Hananya, what did you understand in the debate? So he said, oh, simple. Your guy was showing that God walked away, the Jewish people turned their back on God, and he implied that God also gave up on the Jewish people. But I show him back, but God's hand is still outstretched over us. So then the Caesar turned to the heretic. He turned to the guy who was representing the anti-Jews. So he said to the heretic, how did you understand the debate? Well, I turned my back on them to show that the Jews turned their back on God and God gave up on them. And what did he show you? And he says, I'm not sure. I don't know what he meant. I don't know what he meant by that. Rabbi Shua ben Hananya understood. He understood what he was showing, and he responded with this. But the heretic said, I don't know exactly what he was showing. Amru, Gavra de lo yada mai machule, b'machog yachve kame malka, afku v'kadlu. A pantomime debater that doesn't know the meaning of the pantomime debate? You're going to debate in front of the Caesar? Chutzpah! He took out the heretic debater and he killed him on the spot. This yesod drove the Christian world. Christianity comes from Caesar, right? Who was it? Constantine, right? Constantine was the Roman. Yeah, right. He made the Roman Empire into a Christian empire, right? And
exiled.
Not Jewish. Christian, right? The Caesar. Caesar. So this principle drove the Christian world, drove the church for a millennia, more, almost 2 millennia. In fact, there's an unbelievable book, strongly recommended, called Sefer HaVikuach. Sefer HaVikuach. Sefer HaVikuach is also, it's also a book, the book of the book of the argument, the disputation, and also it's a movie that was put out in the 1950s. The whole thing's on YouTube. Some parts you have to skip because they're a little racy. But what is it? What is it? What's Sefer HaVikuach? Sefer HaVikuach is a famous debate that happened between the Ramban, one of the great Gedolim of all of Jewish history, and a man by the name of Pablo Christiani. Pablo Christiani. Pablo Christiani was born a Jew, and brought up as a yeshiva bacher. Became a Talmud Chacham, ended up chucking it entirely, and became a big guy in the Christian church. So much so that he became like the anti-Jewish spokesman.
And, both sides.
Exactly. Yeah. So he had a debate, and the Ramban wrote up the whole thing. It's called Sefer HaVikuach, the book of the disputation. You can find it in Hebrew in the Kisvei HaRamban, and you can find it in English. It's been published, and it's been made into a movie also, and it's on YouTube. The disputation. Recommend it even. Just skip the parts where you have to skip. But just watch the disputation part. We're having the argument. And the same thing again! The same thing again appears. The same principle that what? The Jewish people were the chosen people, but you abandoned God, and God abandoned you. And that was a massive, massive driving principle of Christianity, Catholicism, for almost 2,000 years. I mean, they were not 2,000 years old, but you know, whatever it is, 1,800 years, whatever it was. In 1948, when David Ben-Gurion, representing the entire Jewish people, declared in front of the entire world that we, the Jewish people, are declaring a Jewish state in the land of Israel, our ancient ancestral homeland. Do you know what that does? First of all, do you know what it did for Christian theology? It's a massive wrench in Christian theology. But you know what it does for the Jewish people? For the Jewish spirit? For the Jewish understanding of reality? Do you know how many people, and do you know world opinion was, especially up till 1945, when 6 million Jews had just been put through ovens? These are not God's people. These people don't represent God. These people aren't don't have anything to do with God's hand in history. They've been at the gutter of history, inquisitions and pogroms and crusades and holocausts. Okay, they've been hanging around, but soon they're going to be mamish flushed down the toilet of the Gamre. And all of a sudden, in this swampy land, a bunch of Holocaust survivors get up and say, we have come back to the land that God promised Avraham Avinu 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, excuse me, was going to be the eternal homeland of his chosen people. Kol Tzofayach Nasu Kol, the prophets have raised their voices and they're singing loud and proud. God has returned to Zion. God has revealed himself, the God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac and Jacob, the God of Moses, the God of Joshua, the God of King David, the God of Samuel, the God of Isaiah, the God of Ezekiel. Not the God that the entire world thought had walked and turned his back on the Jewish people. That very God, the one only true God, has come, has brought his people back. You know what it means? It means that during those 1700, 1800 dark years where the Jews are wandering and dispersed throughout the world and suffering and being killed and being murdered at the stake and being burned in ovens and being killed in crusades, you know what it means? God was there the entire time. He never left us for one second. Like the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim describes, he was Meitzitz Min HaCharakim. He was peering through the latticework. Was he revealed? We couldn't see him. We couldn't feel him. He was distant and disconnected. But he had never left us for one second. A little bit up, a little bit escaped into the world of theory, the world of spirit, yes. But now, with the return of the Jewish people to our land, it's not only about us and our salvation and Kibbutz Galios and the miracles for us, it's also about God. And that's something that is revealed in the prophets. I'll just read you Psukim in Yechezkel. I'm sorry for going so late. I hope everybody will be able to... Not so late. Just look at this Psukim in Sefer Yechezkel. Yechezkel chapter 36. Lachein amar leveis Yisrael, ko amar Adonai Elohim. Lo lemanchem ani oseh beit Yisrael ki'im l'shem kodshi asher chilaltem bagoyim asher batem sham. Therefore, God, this is a prophecy of Yechezkel. Yechezkel chapter 36. It's in this book. I didn't make it up. You can check it out. Everybody agrees to the significance, the holiness of this book. It's right here. Says Yechezkel HaNavi. When's Yechezkel HaNavi? Yechezkel HaNavi was at the very end of Bais Rishon. He went into Galus Bavel, right? He's a contemporary of Mordechai, right? Mordechai also, same thing. He was there at the time of Bchor Bais Rishon, went into Galus Bavel. He actually came back a few times. There's a whole story of him trying to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. Right? Yechezkel HaNavi. He saw the destruction, and he's prophesizing about the future redemption. And he said, so says God, Lo l'manchem ani oseh beis Yisrael. I'm not doing this for you, Jewish people. Ki'im l'shem kodshi, I'm doing it for my holy name. Asher chilaltem bagoyim, which has been disgraced when you have been amongst the nations. Asher batem sham, that you have been amongst. V'kidashti et shmi, and I will sanctify my name, says God. My great name, ha'mechul al bagoyim, my name has been disgraced. It's been a chilul Hashem. My name has been disgraced among the nations of the world. Asher chilaltem betocham, because you, the Jewish people, have been wandering in Germany, in France, and Woodmere, in Los Angeles, in Toronto, in South Africa, in China, and wherever you've been. Ki ani Adonai neum Hashem Elokeinu Adonai Elohim behikadshi bachem leinayhem. And the world will once again know that I am God when I reveal myself in front of your eyes. V'lakachti, and how will I do this? What's step one? V'lakachti etchem min hagoyim, and I will take you from the nations. V'kibatzti etchem mikol haaretzos, and I will take you from all of the lands of the world. V'heveiti etchem el admatchem, and I will bring you back to your land. The Jewish people's return to our land is not only about us, it's about God. All of the Jewish life is about God. Everything's about God. Everything's about God. That's what we're here for. We're not here for ourselves, we're here for God. We're here to be mekadesh shem shamayim. When we put on our tefillin, when we daven, it's not about me. It's not, you know, I need to get this, I don't know, what does anybody need right now? I need to get into this school. God, can you help me get into this college? God, can you help me, you know, get a good wife, build a good home? These are chashuv things, we daven for them. But Rabbi Moshe, that's not the primary Jewish perspective on reality. We're here to mekadesh shem shemayim. We're here to reveal God to the world. That's why he called on Avraham, lech lecha me'aretzcha. The whole Jewish story, the whole Jewish mission is to bring God down to this world and reveal him, to be his messengers. That's what he said in Har Sinai, that we called upon us to be a mamlechas kohen v'goy kadosh. We're a kingdom of priests. What does a priest do? A priest is the one who brings God to the people. And what is the greatest, what is one of the most important ingredients for the Jewish people to be able to do that? To be in the land of mitzvot, the land of Kiddush Hashem, to be in the land, in God's land, God's people in God's land with God's Torah. That's the recipe. That's the recipe to bring God into this world. And there's ways to go. We need to be Hamikdash. We need to kick out all the bad guys. We need to destroy Amalek. We need to have a Jewish king. But Kibbutz Galios, on the verge of 2,000 years of God being in hiding, so to speak, LaHashem HaYeshua. It's a revelation. It's a day of, it's a time period. It's a historical period of tremendous. It's a tremendous Yeshua salvation for HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to be up there, forgotten, distant, meitzitz min acharakim, peering through the lattice work. He wants to be revealed for the entire world, and that's our job, and that's what happened. In a tremendous way, when the Jewish people came back and restored our presence in our ancestral homeland. We'll just finish with, there's so much more to say, but we'll just finish with Rashi on the Pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Who knows what Rashi is? If you should know a Rashi on Chumash, you know? It's a good Rashi to know, no? How does Rashi understand the Pasuk of Shema Yisrael, Hear, O Israel? It's an important verse. Anybody, yes? According to some, it's the most important verse in Chumash. We say it every single day, mitzvah del raisa, morning and night, right? What does it mean? Anybody know what it means? Hear, O Israel. Hashem Elokeinu.
Hashem is our God.
Hashem is one. Look at what Rashi says. We'll skip all the shtick. Look what Rashi says. Says Rashi, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Says Rashi, Hashem Shehu Elokeinu Ata. God who is our God now, Ata with an ayin. Velo, it's also Man Boys Choir made a great song. Anybody know the Man Boys Choir song? Hashem Shelokeinu Ata, God who is our God now. Velo Elokei Ha'umos, and he is not the God of the nations of the world. Hu Atid Lihios Hashem Echad. He will be the one God. Shene'emar. Ki Az Efoch Ala Amim Safa Berura Likro Kulam B'Shem Hashem. You know what the goal is? The goal is that God is not just our God. The goal is that God becomes revealed to the entire world as the one true God of all people, without any competitors, without any contesting. V'nemar, Bayom Havu Yeh Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. What does that mean? We say it every single day at the end of Aleinu. On that day, God will be one and his name will be one. What does that mean? He's not one today. What do you mean? That day is going to be one, is it?
Like everyone will recognize.
That's right. The goal that we're working towards is the international humankind revelation, understanding of acceptance of God as the one God. And if you look in the Nevi'im, one of the greatest vessels of that being able to happen is the return of the Jewish people to our homeland. And that's a Lashem HaYeshua, that's a salvation for God. We say every single morning, I'll just finish with this. Anybody who gets the davening early enough, you say this, the Kabbalah Sa'omu Choshemayim, right after Birchas HaShachar, right, when we say Shema, right, before Pesukei Zimra. So this is right after that. What do we say? Maybe recognize it. Ata Hashem Elokeinu, Bashamayim V'aretz, you are God in the heavens and the earth, U'bishmei Shemayim Elyonim, and the highest of the heavens, Emes Da Rishon V'atu Achron, U'baladecha, besides for you, there is no God. Bring in your exiles from the four corners of the world. And Let all know, let all Bayolam, all people of the world, let all of them know, Ki ata hu ha'elokim levadcham mamlachos aretz, that you are the only one God from all of the kings of the world. Ata asis shemayim, you made the heavens, ves aretz, and you made the earth. Es hayam es kol asher bam, you made the seas and everything within them. And who in the higher realms or the lower realms can tell you what to do? Avinu shebashamayim, our Father in heaven. Asei imanu chesed, do a kindness for us. Bavor shimcha hagadol, for your name. Do a kindness for us, for your name. Shenikra aleinu, which is called upon us. There's an unbelievable, right? It's for you, for your name, which is called upon us. There is a very, very intertwined, enmeshed relationship between God's name and us. His name is on us. Meaning what happens with the Jewish people is an indication of the status of God in reality. So do for us a great chesed for your great name, which is called upon us. V'kayim lanu Hashem Elokeinu mashakasuv, and do for us, Hashem Elokeinu, which is written, what's written? Ba'eis hahi avi eschem, I'll bring you. Uba'eis kapti eschem, I'll gather you. Ki eten eschem l'shem l'tehila, I'll give you a great and praiseworthy name. B'chol amei ha'aretz. B'shuvi es shivuseichem, when I ingather your exiles, when I bring you back from your exile, when I bring you back from being trapped throughout the world, le'inechem, in front of your eyes, Amar Hashem, so has God said. With the Jewish return to the land of Israel, there is one of the greatest Kiddush Hashem, sanctification of God's name, that the prophets told us was coming. And the truth of the matter is, if you look a little bit in history books, the church was in a huge pickle when the Jewish state was founded. And they said in 1948, they said, well, really? It's not really true. The God of Israel hasn't really re-revealed himself. You know why? Because they don't yet have Judah and Samaria. They don't have Jerusalem. They don't have the heartland of Israel. They have Tel Aviv and Haifa. You know, if you look at the map from 1948, you know, the tiny swath along the coast without Yehuda and Shomron, without the center, the heartland of the country, without Hebron, without Beit Lechem, without Yerushalayim, without the old city, without Har HaBayis, without Shechem, without Beit El. So they said, yeah, okay, fine. No. What happened?
Didn't take too long.
19 years later, in 1967, the Six-Day War, with unbelievable miracles, we conquered everything. We conquered Yerushalayim, we conquered Hebron, we conquered Beit Lechem, we conquered Shechem, we had it all. Alright, so look in the history books, how the church dealt with it then. But Lemaisa, the church who represented the war against God, right? The war against God began from Christian people, the war against the God of the Jewish people, it basically ended. I mean, okay, the Christians are still strong, they have a few billion people, they're doing okay, but Lemaisa, the Kiddush Hashem, the revelation of God that happened with the Jewish return to the land of Israel and then to Yerushalayim and to the heartland, Yehuda and Shomron, it's the most tremendous Kiddush Hashem we've seen in 2,000 years. And it's not the end of the story. If anybody tells you, you know, this is the end of the story, then obviously, I don't think there is anybody that says that, you know. We need a Beis HaMikdash, we need Nevuah, we need the Melech HaMashiach, we need Malchus, we need a Sanhedrin and Dora, we need a reestablishment of Shemitah and Yovel in a Dorai Salah. We need to destroy Amalek. There's ways to go. But the Kiddush Hashem that happened as a result, the Yeshua for God himself, so to speak, that happened for God himself as a result of this chapter in Jewish history, is unprecedented. And for this, there's a reason to celebrate, a reason to give Shiras V'Tishbachos, not only for our own Jewish self-centered salvation, but for Hashem himself.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Ryan.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Wow.
Was it recorded?
Yeah.